The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but Christianity is so darned unfair and so judgmental. Doesn't the Bible teach, after all, that God hates homosexuals? Actually, the Bible teaches no such thing, and I'd really like to clear this up. God loves everybody, but he does call us to leave behind lifestyles that were not part of his plan. I know what you're thinking right now. Of course, I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking gay people can no more change their lifestyle, can no more change their sexual orientation then straight people can change theirs. Well, I know you feel that sincerely, but I hope you'll stay with us because I have a guest today whose own personal life story tells us otherwise, tells us just the opposite. Ann Polk is listed as one of the nation's 100 most influential people on the subject of homosexuality, and we'll be bringing Ann on in just a few minutes. First, some news, and believe it or not, there was quite a bit of news this weekend. The death of Michael Jackson was not the only news. I know to some of you it was. Putting aside the fact that two other American icons passed away, Farrah Fawcett and Ed McMahon, there are so many other things going on right now, it's difficult to even pick the most important. But one candidate is the most hideous bill in history that has sneaked through the House of Representatives, and it did it on Friday while the nation was asleep. None of this mattered to people because our country has been literally pacified over the death of Michael Jackson. Now, look, don't get me wrong. I'm sad for him, and of course I'm sad for his family. I do agree that Michael Jackson's death is real news and important to the many people who loved him and viewed him as a cultural icon. Some headlines about his death the first few days, along with a handful of television specials, are certainly in order. And if MTV and VH1 want to play nothing but Jackson music, I guess that's appropriate. In fact, I can't imagine what else they would do right now. But at the same time, is it naive of me to hope that ostriches will take their heads out of the sand long enough to see our freedoms removed? At least those ostriches working for our 24-hour cable networks. Have you seen the gleam in Greta Van Susteren's eyes? Oh, I'm sure she's a decent human being, and of course she views the whole Jackson thing as a tragedy, but I think it's a journalist part of her that's perked up, because this is the kind of stuff that fuels her nightly program. Now Greta has a theme again, something to give her as much mileage as Anna Nicole, Scott Peterson, Natalie Holloway. I thought she would talk about those subjects until the second coming of Christ and ignore the second coming of Christ. Lately, the red meat that feeds her panel of talking heads has been limited to unsensational events, you know, the kind of stuff that actually affects the whole world. Do you remember a little trivia, a little incident which dominated our 24-hour news networks in the weeks leading up to 9/11? It was the disappearance of Washington intern Chandra Levy. Now, naturally, for Chandra's parents, that was the only important subject. What could have been more important? But people disappear all the time as far as general news is concerned. And Chandra Levy saturated our news only because Congressman Gary Condit was alleged to have something to do with her invisibility. It put our country in a trance. Then 9/11 hit. Another 9/11 could come at the drop of a hat, folks. World events are boiling like a pressure cooker, and it's only a matter of time before something erupts. Will we be wasting our efforts talking about whether Michael's friends deserted him or whether his doctor failed him? I'll tell you, it couldn't be timed better. Friday, our House of Representatives passed a bill nicknamed Cap and Trade. I'll bet over two-thirds of the country doesn't even know what the cotton picking bill is all about. Maybe you yourself never even heard of it before. Well, don't worry. Most of Congress doesn't understand it either. The bill is 1,200 pages long. Few, if any, of our politicians read it because they brought it in just hours before it was time to vote on it. It's like asking people to read War and Peace in 1 hour. And it was thick. It was phone book thick with pages, even though it was certainly shorter than the stimulus package bill that they also didn't read. Cap and trade, code for clean energy bill, was cranked out quickly and jammed through by our administration. Well, why the rush? For one thing, taking time would mean debating the subject. Our current administration and current Congress do not seem to enjoy debate. A real discussion, after all, would question the whole purpose of this clean energy bill in the face of some 700 scientists and meteorologists around the world calling the whole global warming paranoia a hoax. Yes, you heard me correctly, 700. That's three times the amount of scientists who sponsored the UN's global warming resolution. But we can't take the time to hear these people out. Oh, no. Neither should we dare point to hot spots like Arizona, which just had a record cold winter this year. Call me a romantic, but a record cold winter doesn't sound like it's warming. I mean, I know I'm not a meteorologist, but that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then there's another reason for a bill that burns rubber faster than those unfriendly cars, whom they also planned to outlaw. Obama promised while he was campaigning that there would be no raised taxes on the middle class or small business. Remember, no new taxes for the middle class, only on evil rich people. Well, technically, cap and trade is not a tax because it will not be controlled or collected by a tax agency. It is instead a mega morphed gas and electric bill, which some estimate can cost Americans $3,000 a year more than what they already pay. You see, our government, by joining with gas and electric companies, is imposing a tax disguised as a monthly stipend that you're already used to paying. And since you're used to paying it, you're supposed to be too stupid to notice what's going on. It's a pretty good disguise, actually. I mean, when you get your bill, the envelope will look the same. The logo will look exactly the same. It's only when you open it up and see the cost that your eyes will pop out of their sockets. But the very fact that you someday see this bill will mean the law will have long since passed. And it did pass our House of Representatives. It's going to the Senate, so we don't know if it's going to become law yet. And if you find this bill someday, it'll mean that it did pass without you having had time to ask President Obama. If this kind of sort of violates his no new tax pledge, the idea here is for our government to help us save energy by taxing energy more, thus discouraging the usage of that bad, nasty energy and funding clean, green energy at the same time. Brings a tear to my eye. Great way to kill two birds with one stone. But let's not describe it that way. It might encourage environmentalists to find even more taxes for us. So you see, Obama did keep his promises about no new taxes. Oh, yeah, sure, you'll be paying $3,000 a year extra, but that is not a tax. It is not a tax. Why? Because we don't call it a tax. That's why. As for Obama's other promise about no new legislation without first putting impending bills over the internet for 48 hours so the public can be aware of them, well, no, he didn't do that, but he was probably just thinking of you. He's probably just being sensitive to the populace, which won't care. This weekend, they're too busy mourning Michael Jackson, and the Michael Jackson story has been virtually the only thing we have seen on the 24 Hours News Networks. It'll be the same through tonight, through Sunday night. And Greta, she'll be discussing this for months, if not a whole year. Never mind cap and trade. Never mind North Korea. Never mind Iran. Oh yeah. That nationalized healthcare thing that would literally destroy our country is also coming up once again. Never mind. Meanwhile, I wonder how much energy will be used up when people open their little envelopes and immediately call electric companies to find out what the Sam Hill is going on. When will that happen? Well, maybe just about this time next year. June 2010, Greta Van Susteren will probably be ready to start winding down on the Michael Jackson story by then, and people might be able to discuss other matters, such as a government which steals more than Alibaba's 40 thieves. Oh, wait. I just blew it, didn't I? By innocently referring to a classic children's tale, I accidentally mentioned Middle East thieves. Yikes. Now, it was meant as a metaphor for Washington criminals, but I did say it. Guilty, guilty. I guess I'll worry about that one later when the hate speech bill also tiptoes through. But that's not coming out yet. I should be safe for another week or so. Speaking of hate speech, my guest today is very concerned about such legislation. I am privileged to be interviewing on my show for the second time Ann Polk. Ann was on our program early in 2007. It was such an important interview that that program is still posted on my website, and I hope you'll go listen to it because some of the information she shared then will be different than what we talk about today. My website is bobsiegel.net. That's Bob Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. Ann Polk's life changed dramatically in 1982 when she left the homosexual lifestyle that she had embraced since her teen years. Her pursuit of Jesus Christ led her to the famous Exodus International, the nation's oldest organization dedicated to helping men and women overcome homosexuality. God transformed Anne, and she is now a voice offering hope to lesbian women who need to know that change is possible. It was at Exodus that Anne met her husband John, who had also left homosexuality, and the two were married in the year 1992. Since then, the Polks have shared their remarkable story of transformation nationally and internationally on such notable programs as Nightline, 60 Minutes, Oprah, Good Morning America, ABC's World News Tonight, Focus on the Family, and the 700 Club. Their story has appeared in hundreds of newspapers and magazines, including People, USA Today, Rolling Stone, Time, Newsweek, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, U.S. News and World Report. In 1998, Anne's picture and testimony appeared in a full-page national advertising campaign featured in The New York Times, USA Today, and The Wall Street Journal. That campaign created a firestorm that resulted in more than 400 media broadcasts and articles, including the August 13, 1998 cover of Newsweek, all focused on Anne and John and how they left homosexuality. Because of her expertise, the Polks, who released their first book, Love Won Out, in 1999, have been included among the 100 most influential people in the United States on the subject of homosexuality. Anne, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure being with you.
What an honor to have you on again. You know, to prepare today, this morning I replayed the interview that we had done a couple years ago, and it had been a while since I heard it. And I've got to tell you, I was just impressed all over again about what a remarkable person you are, what a brave young lady you are.
Thank you, Bob. You're very kind. I appreciate that.
Now, let me tell our audience again, on our other show that you can still listen to off of my website, Anne focused mostly on her testimony. So we're not going to talk as much about that today because there are so many issues. In just these couple of years, homosexuality has become even more of a hot button issue. It was already a hot button issue 2 years ago, but with Prop 8 and other things, it's just really snowballed, if something hot can snowball. But Anne, for the sake of some of the people who didn't hear the other interview or don't have access to the internet, let's start by reviewing your testimony a little bit. Go ahead and just run it through from the top for us.
Sure. Well, I grew up in a family that was pretty stable, but at the age of four, I was molested by a teenage boy. So that set off a course of me becoming, eventually, fast forward about 10 years, a girl who was a tomboy with a purpose. I had a lot of my girlfriends were tomboys too, but when they hit their puberty point, they were really interested in boys all of a sudden, and I had this broken part of myself that I didn't realize, and you know, I just didn't feel good about myself as a girl. And so when I hit this stage of puberty, I found myself attracted to girls instead of guys.
Now, so, let me interject right here, because prior to the year 1973, mm-hmm. when the American Psychiatric Association declassified homosexuality as an emotional problem, my understanding is that there were all kinds of clinical case studies which showed that, not that they were trying to do a one-size-fits-all, but they were claiming that many different kinds of emotional causes, and I know high on the list was the idea of somebody being molested. When you're molested, not that homosexuality is necessarily a byproduct, a molestation can affect us in many different ways. But every time I've counseled with a homosexual, I've heard, when they've been honest with me, I've heard this every time.
It's astoundingly a high prevalency. I interviewed 265 women in writing my second book, which is Restoring Sexual Identity. It's a book written for women who want to overcome homosexuality. Those 265 women, it was, oh gosh, they had been sexually molested about, I think, hopefully I'm quoting my own literature right here, 66% or higher. So not 8 or 9 out of 10 had some form of childhood abuse, but 6 to 7 out of 10 of all of these women had encountered sexual abuse.
Now, what I've also discovered, Anne, is that a lot of times women who've taken on lesbian tendencies can remember a lot of these things. It's a little different with males and different for some women.
Oh, sure.
I think there are many people who would say, hey, wait a minute, I don't ever remember being molested. But isn't it also true that that can be such a traumatic thing that a person can go through kind of a hysterical amnesia and not even remember it? So I think many gay people, when they say that they think they were born that way and they've always had this tendency and they don't remember being molested or don't remember any other possible cause, I think they're telling the truth, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the jury isn't still out because they may have had it blocked out.
That's true. And then not all people who end up being gay were molested. So
right, exactly.
Kind of this,
and we'll talk about what some of those other possibilities are and other reasons when we return. Hang with me. And over the break, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with my special guest, Ann Polk. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound. You're more beautiful.
Welcome back to Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, and I'm joined with Ann Polk, one of the 100 most influential people on the subject of homosexuality. Came out of a lesbian lifestyle herself, has turned away from it, is happily married to a man who's an ex-homosexual. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the fact that molestation had something to do with you going toward a lesbian direction. And you were mentioning right before that there are some other causes. What are a few of the other causes? Because, you know, we've just got a brainwashed America right now that says there are no causes. Everybody was born that way.
Right. Well, there are a number of causes, and there's certainly new ones today than there were 10 years ago.
Yeah, because we're getting newer and newer in ideas and creativity,
right,
aren't we?
The newer ones are more, I'll get to that in just one second, but the typical way someone ends up homosexually inclined would be to have some form of sexual abuse early on that would, in my case, push myself. I vowed I'm not going to be, I'm not going to be abused like that again, so I'm not going to take on the female characteristics. If I act more like a boy, then that won't happen to me again. So I rejected my own sense of good. I didn't realize that being a girl was good anymore, so...
Didn't you also tell me once that there was a girlfriend of yours and at one time you kind of were experimenting and kind of acting out male and female roles together?
Right. And I felt a lot more comfortable in the male role because it was in control.
And that's very understandable because you were abused by a male. I think so often people get defensive about this because they're thinking, oh, well, the Bible talks about homosexuality as a sin, but homosexuality is also a result. And God not only wants to deliver us from sin we commit, He wants to deliver us from sin committed against us. That was a horrible thing that was committed against you. And
exactly.
God understood how you felt and had compassion for your predicament. And I think a lot of people are missing out on the compassion that God has for them because they don't even want us to talk about all the different dimensions of this issue.
Yes, and there are many dimensions of the issue, that's for sure. Compassion is a very strong key to dealing with this issue. Another one that's very, very common is a broken relationship or an inappropriate relationship with the same gender parent. So we're talking about a whole lot of boys nowadays that don't even have dads. That may be a better situation than having a dad who's present but not engaging, who's not strong and warm at the same time.
I would think the second one would even be worse because if somebody's not there, they're not there. But if they're there and they're not showing you love, then you take it personally, and little
right.
kids tend to blame themselves for things.
Right, that's for sure. And then for the women, pretty common that the girl takes on the mother role for the mother. very strange kind of bend here, and then they think they have a real close relationship, but there's always this understood underlying thing of, well, if you displease me, then I won't love you.
Yeah, so this very unstated, dysfunctional.
Yeah, and these girls tend to think that they have a really close relationship with their mom. The other ones, if they've seen their mom being a doormat and they're rejecting the traditional marriage model, it's because perhaps they've seen abuse in the family system.
Or maybe abusive boyfriends that a divorced mother
keeps
bringing
into
the house. What a nightmare to put our kids through.
I know. There are a lot of, unfortunately, very painful experiences that can lead to homosexuality. Another one is a basically straight person, particularly a woman in this case, who goes through a very difficult boyfriend relationship or a husband-wife relationship and leaves the marriage and is leaning heavily on one female friend, and that may end up being turning into a gay relationship.
Becomes kind of a you and me against the world bonding.
Right. It's kind of an imbalanced thing, especially if there's one person who tends towards homosexuality in the first place. It may especially happen, but I mean, as you can see, there are so many different routes to arrive at homosexuality. One that troubles me the most nowadays isn't necessarily all the wounded baggage from backgrounds and growing up, because, you know, sometimes as people repair that, they drop off the homosexual component. Even one Siegel, she was counseling a bunch of women in New York, and she wasn't even attempting to help them overcome homosexuality, a Jewish woman, a Jewish counselor, a therapist, but through psychoanalysts and began to work on their background and childhood. And these women, as they felt better and worked through their issues, one by one, these partners broke off and they began to live a different kind of lifestyle that was healthier for them. So interesting things can occur, but the deal about today that worries me so very, very much is, as a mother, I have three sons. As a mother, I'm looking at this culture knowing that girls that would not have, and boys, who would not have been homosexual-oriented based on their brokenness are being led towards homosexuality by the culture, by the hypersexualization of our culture on cable, and the L word on the cable shows, and all sorts of things that girls may not have thought about and guys may not have perceived themselves as. And then there's a trap when they enter that door, if they perchance allow themselves to fantasize about that or to act out about it at some point in time, the trap shuts really like a bulldog's teeth on a
Because they would say you wouldn't fantasize about that unless that's your natural orientation. They
exactly.
Hear that lie.
And that the comment that the gay community has been stating years and years and still is doing it is, you know, if you're gay, you're always going to be that way. And so if a person has a homosexual experience, and I know of some women, particularly since I'm a woman, they've shared with me these stories, they've had an experience earlier on in their lives, and they've heard this chant, oh, you're gay, you're always going to be that way, because the media proclaims this message, and the APA, the American Psychological Association, was proclaiming that message for a while, that when somebody's gay, it's unchangeable, it's immutable, is their word, immutable, unchangeable, same thing. So once you've experienced something along those lines, and then this trap door shuts over you, and well, you're stuck there forever.
Now, Anne, there may be some women listening right now who find this too touchy of a subject to call in. Of course, any of our listeners are welcome to call in. But is there a way for people to get a hold of you through email? Or I don't want you to give out a personal phone number, but is there an email or a website that people can connect with you if they had some questions that were too personal for them to share over the air?
Sure. They could contact me by letter through Harvest House Publishers. They forward any letters on to me.
Have to explain what a letter is. I think with the internet people, a real honest-to-goodness hard copy letter?
Snail mail, right?
The kind that Fred Flintstone used.
T-O, www.exodus.to, Exodus International. They can write me through there.
Okay, and that is an email, www.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or through Focus on the Family.
Okay.
You can contact me through that way as well.
All right. Hang with me again over another break. My special guest, Anne Polk, one of the 100 most influential people on the subject of homosexuality. but with a slant and a take that you're not going to hear from the mainstream media, so you'll hear it from us when we return. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle, so when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm joined with Ann Polk. Now, Ann, I know that one of the things you wanted to talk about today, and I certainly do too, is all this hate crime legislation, which is code for the militant gay agenda. But let's continue a little more with your testimony first, again, for the sake of people that didn't hear our program the first time you were on. You believe that your sexuality was awakened through a molestation from a teenage male. And then let's just move through some of the events of your life that followed after that. You became a tomboy for a while. What other things happened?
I became a tomboy, and then I tried to fit in high school. And then I went away to college. And at that point, I decided I was gay for sure. After all, I'd had these feelings for so long, I couldn't remember. You've heard that story over and over again.
Yes.
And I decided that I was going to become an activist. I was going to promote homosexuality. That say that you could be a Christian and be gay, even though I really didn't believe what the Bible had to say at all. In fact, I didn't even believe in the biblical God. And then, wouldn't you know it, I began to have dreams about a Jesus. And then that led me to a ministry that you were leading on campus at UC Santa Barbara, Campus Ambassadors.
Yes, and, in the interest of full disclosure, Ann and I actually knew each other many years ago.
I didn't
know she'd become so darn famous in the meantime, and so we just reconnected again these last couple of years.
Yes. So, but, you know, the funny thing is, there I found myself in that evangelism training class realizing, oh, I am not a Christian, and, oh, God is real, and encountering him changed me, and I realized that the love I was seeking through homosexuality was wasn't the place I was going to find it. It was going to be in the presence and person of the healer himself, the God of the universe, who was calling my name and saying, hey, I want you, I love you. And that's what drew me to Christ, and that's what drew me out of homosexuality, is God's great and tender love and truth. And so that's kind of the foundation of what's made me the woman I am today.
Now, I know that you kind of drifted back or had a bout with it later, because even though a person might turn from a particular lifestyle, once something goes into our mind, we can't just wave a magic wand and make it go away. So,
yeah, that's true.
So later on, this became an issue again. And around that time, is that when you started connecting with Exodus Ministries?
Exactly. I thought that I was going to be able to tackle it with prayer and accountability and worship and reading the Bible. And those things are wonderful and grounding, but what really helped me was understanding why in the world I was struggling with homosexuality in the first place, and then applying biblical truth to that area, to the area of my sexuality. So those things went a long way and produced tremendous change in me, deep, heart-wrenching change. I began to deal with the molestation, forgiving the molester, the whole. And that's not all. I mean, that's just one little element. But realizing that being a girl was a good thing, and that I actually, this is pretty fun. And the guys sure are different. And so anyway, those things led me on the understanding of, oh, there are a lot of really distinct differences between myself and those men over there. And they're not all bad. In fact, some of them can be trusted. And so this was not a momentary understanding. It grew over years. And it became heart knowledge, and not just I thought these things, but I really understood that they were true. And at that point, I began to blossom into the woman I became later on. I did stumble along the way, but that's what led me into getting more help.
Well, we all stumble along the way, and we're all guilty of sin. I do think the church has done a grave injustice to the gay community by isolating this out as if it's somehow more sinful than anything else. On the other hand, I think the church has learned a lot more about compassion the last few years. Some would say it's too little, too late, because we have this reputation now in the church where we're just absolutely demonized.
Well, that's true, but we've allowed this to happen. And a very important thing is, why is a Christian perceived the way they are? Is it because of how we act? Are we Bible-beating people? Are we taking the Bible and whacking people on the head with it, with the scriptures? In that case, maybe we deserve some of our, you know.
Yeah, the holier-than-thou. That the message of Christianity seems to come across as, I'm better than you, I'm not a sinner, you are. Those were the kinds of things that the people known as the Pharisees were saying in Jesus' day. Jesus got into more trouble with the religious hypocrites than with anybody else. If Jesus were alive today, I believe he would get kicked out of half of our churches. And some of our pastors and ministers would have the greatest problem with them.
And, you know, the gay community had no problem with its strategy of minimizing Christians. They used people like Fred Phelps with his Southern Baptist inbred and somewhat incestuous church, married multiple times and yet condemning homosexuality. He'd show up at a major person who died who happened to be a gay person and show up with signs of hatred and just
right at the funerals. I remember that. What
you remember him?
What
well,
a
he
nightmare!
He showed up to one of our Christian conferences and was standing against us, and I actually was proud of that.
Yeah. But, if he's standing against you, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I think I'm doing all right. But anyway, he was the kind of person that began to typify to America Christianity. What happened was media savvy people would present that kind of image and then again and again and again and again promote the idea that Christians are homophobic, are intolerant, are mean-spirited like this fellow. But, you know, the thing about it is we allowed that to happen. And they're definitely and deliberately over 15 years' time, maybe 20 years' time, have sought to typify Christians in such a way, to negatively stereotype us. If you watch any shows, like, let's say, Desperate Housewives, Bree on that show, who murdered somebody and who hid murders and lied about profound things that would, you know, they're not misdemeanors. They're felony crimes, right? She should have gone to jail many times over. Well, she claimed to be a Christian and would hold a Bible and wore a cross.
Oh, yeah, that's Hollywood's version of the Christian, is the person with a Bible in one hand and some knife in the other hand.
Right, and the thing about it is we can laugh about that because we know we are not that. But the gay community doesn't laugh about being typified in such a way. And their power derives from the very same thing.
So we deserve that to some extent because it is a...
I don't want to say we deserve it, but what we need to do is stand up and say, hey, this is not okay, because people have come to believe that message. There's a whole new generation of people growing up in America that don't know what Christianity is.
And that may be the first thing they hear about. Well, Christians are intolerant people. Exactly. Christians are judgmental people. Christians are self-righteous people.
Exactly.
Okay,
and
you're wonderful. Stay with me for one more break. We'll be right back.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Bill, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuild." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuildInc.com. That's ProBuildInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuild.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined with Ann Polk. And it's such a twisted pretzel because for me, on one hand, I feel that most gay people just want to be left alone and want to live in peace. And I think if they knew the love and the healing that God had for them, they would probably take it. And I feel nothing but compassion for them. On the other hand, I do get frustrated and feel an anger for the militant gay activists, who I believe are a very small portion of the gay community. But as the old saying goes, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Do you find that you sometimes compartmentalize them in those same ways? You have most gay people, but then you have the militant gay activists who we must oppose, we must confront, but then there's another whole host of people to feel compassion toward.
You know what? I actually don't compartmentalize them, but here's how I approach it a little bit differently. I approach them all with compassion. What I realize now, in this generation, 5-10 years after this message has been going, this propaganda has been going pretty strong, is that everybody tends to believe that homosexuality is now, people are born that way. It's not an argument anymore. There is no evidence for that, but it's no longer an argument. They will believe that, even though in the gay community itself, if you go into their own writing, they'll say, oh, they're lamenting their former lesbian partner who happened to now be with a guy. But no one will identify that as, they left homosexuality permanently. They're always welcome back. You get it? So the whole point here is that the propaganda has propagandized so well that everybody now within the gay community and those who are being drawn into the gay community are buying it hook, line, and sinker. I guess it's the old adage. If you say things enough and long enough and many times, you have convinced without argument.
Well, in fact, there was actually, I don't know, did you ever read the book After the Ball that came out in the 1980s? It was an actual manifesto written by a couple of gay activists.
I didn't read that.
Where they introduced ideas that have been, we've seen it happen, an obligatory gay person in every sitcom to portray them as not just lovable characters, but as the character that has their head squared on a little more tightly than those dumb heterosexuals that are so naive. But they said something really interesting in this book. They said, even when you meet a Christian who you know is compassionate, demonize them anyway. Now, I agree. I think you and I would both agree that to a very large extent, the church had this coming because of our track record. But even as things have started changing, and most Christians that I know now, they do treat gay people compassionately, but they're not even given opportunity to anymore, because it said in this book, portray them as and demonize them, even if you know they're compassionate, even if they're people who love the sinner but hate the sin. I go to Skyline here in San Diego. Jim Garlow was one of the architects of the Prop 8 movement. He was just vilified in the media, and yet there are gay people, not gay people who've converted to Christianity. There are gay people who attend Skyline and love Jim Garlow because he's very compassionate toward them. but he was willing to take a stand, not against them as people,
right,
but on the issue so that our rights aren't taken away. And this gets into what we wanted to talk about with the hate crime legislation. We've got to take stands on these issues, even though when we're talking about the people as individuals, that's a whole different story.
Exactly. The whole point is the message has gone forth. The gay community is communicating bit by bit what they hope to accomplish, and they're getting their way. Now, it's not about disliking somebody who's gay. I don't actually hate gay activists. I don't hate gay people. I have a strong compassion towards
them. No, not hate the activists, but we could hate what they're doing without hating them as people.
Yeah, and exactly what I hope to do is promote the idea that love and truth go together. Of course, I'm not the first one to say that. Jesus said that. But love and truth. Love is kind and true. What we've come to believe somehow is that the truth that the Christians hold, the moral truth, the moral voice of the church, we've given up the right to define the rules because we've not wanted to be called names. And I really applaud your pastor, who's compassionate and yet truth-telling.
And he knows that by telling the truth, he could be compassionate till the cows come home, and he won't be portrayed that way. But to anybody...
He won't be portrayed that way, but he will be respected.
And to anyone who knows him, if they know him personally, they will at least know the truth.
Of course. And in the end, he will be respected. And I don't mean the end of this life. I mean the end of some of the arguments. As he stands firm in his conviction and yet with compassion, he will in the end hear... be understood as being a respectable person. The problem is there is a deliberate and intense attack force in mind of minimizing Christians and negative stereotyping them. And when something happens to us, we generally don't cry foul and go pursuing a First Amendment case with the Supreme Court. We don't end up going through the court system usually. We're more prone to forgiveness. I remember being on Good Morning America, and they were in my little tiny apartment with my husband. We were newly married. We were doing an interview, and I said, "Oh, you have Dr. Isay on your thing." "Yeah, well, are you going to give us fair and balanced coverage for this issue?" And they said, "Oh, no, we're going to have to give the final say to so-and-so, Dr. Isay."
Well, they openly admitted that they weren't going to do fair and balanced.
They weren't concerned. He said, "Well, you know, you guys aren't going to go do bomb threats." But if they did it the other way, you see, they would be threatened by ACT UP or other heavy activist organizations at the time that they would potentially have to evacuate their building or something bad would happen.
I think our culture has just been conditioned to roll over and play dead for this issue.
The thing is, it's not helping. We're rolling over and playing dead. We're laying down and being the doormat. We're being codependent, essentially, with our culture. We're letting them get away with doing whatever they want so we won't look bad. And at the same time, we're more worried about what they say than standing up for what's right.
And these are important words, and you have the credibility to speak them, Anne, because you've experienced this from both sides of the equation. Okay, hold with me over the break. We're going to come back for one more segment with Anne Polk on the subject, very controversial subject, of homosexuality. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com, or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
I'm joined today by Ann Polk. And this is our last segment, and before we continue, because we'll be right in the middle of something when we have to suddenly leave, I want to thank you again for taking your time to come on the program. You are just absolutely wonderful. You are one of the most courageous people I know.
And thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it. Thank you for standing up and talking about this, too.
Well, thank you. Now, how have you been treated? You're in a very interesting position because people would, like you said yourself, people are very inconsistent when somebody leaves the gay lifestyle. They go, oh, well, you weren't truly gay, but you're welcome to come
back. I've heard it all.
Now, how have you been? How have you been treated?
I'll address that, and then the very same next breath, the interviewer on national TV will say the opposite position of, oh, you must never have been gay then. It's like this presumption that people like me simply don't exist, even though it's known to exist in the gay community. Of course it is. I remember saying to somebody on PBS, I said, she was all sorts of upset at me that I was talking about leaving homosexuality. And I said, what is it about me, to this lesbian other person on the show? What is it about, why is this so threatening to you that people like me exist? It's just threatening. It's so threatening to the core of the value system. But, hey, can we move to this hate crimes bill?
Yes, because it's very important. And a lot of people don't even know that
scary.
This is coming up. Go ahead.
The condition of the country right now is that the hate crimes bill has passed in the House of Representatives. It passed on, I think it was June 24th, wasn't it?
There's so many things going on right now that I had heard that they were discussing it and that it was going to pass last week, but I don't even remember one news story saying that it actually did pass. So you're saying it actually did pass the House of Representatives?
It passed the House.
It's going to go to the Senate in a few weeks then, I suppose.
Right. The Senate vote is going to happen shortly, within the next 2 weeks, actually, after the July 4th break.
So explain what this bill claims to be to our audience and then tell them what it really is, because there's a dichotomy here.
The claim of this is that it protects people or adds an extra penalty if somebody has anti-gay rhetoric. But not only that, but anything against gender bias of any kind. If somebody is cross-dressing, they say a comment about something and then somebody else assaults the person, then the person who said the first comment can be guilty of a hate crime because it's a verbal speech, another person took action. So basically what's happening is one person can be so-called held responsible for a different person's action, which is a really evil thing. And that means that pastors speaking up about homosexuality and saying, hey, this is not God's plan for people. This is not healthy for individuals, and it isn't. I've been there. I know what that's like. It's very inward focused, and you push away all your other relationships to maintain that one, and it becomes very and some physical abuse happens within lesbian relationships because of the jealousy. And I mean, there's a whole bunch slew of things, not even touching the AIDS crisis. So if perchance, now where was I going, Bob? I lost my train of thought. Okay,
but what the hate crimes bill claims to be about and then what's really going to happen. You're doing very good of showing the difference.
You. But the whole idea is that a pastor like yours who speaks up and says, hey, homosexuality is not the best thing, that person in the future can be held for a hate crime.
Don't you think this will also, won't they someday just drop the crime part of it? Because it's already against the law to beat people up. It's already against the law to kill
exactly.
people. To add an extra incentive because of hate, it seems to me that next it won't even be hate crime. It'll just be hate speech. There was already a pastor that was
exactly.
arrested in Sweden.
Right.
And the case got overturned, but he was arrested and did some time in jail. And no violence was perpetrated after he spoke. They arrested him just on the basis of a sermon from Romans chapter 1.
That's correct. And someone lost his job in Maryland as the Washington Metro Board Director because he was called homosexuality behavior, according to his Catholic upbringing, as being a deviant behavior and a whole completely different thing. He wasn't even at the Metro Board, or he was doing that somewhere else. And the guy, another gay elected official, heard about it and had made sure the governor fired this fellow Smith, Robert Smith, from his position, because the governor wants inclusiveness and tolerance. So, in other words, in the name of tolerance, they're being intolerant.
Exactly.
There's only one voice allowed, and believe me, it's not the Christian voice.
And, you know, tolerance is such a buzzword anyway. Nobody tolerates everything. So
nobody
we have to have discussions about what we do or do not tolerate. Would somebody tolerate a racist? Would somebody
right.
tolerate murder? We don't tolerate everything.
Right. And tolerance isn't the best virtue, actually. I mean, love and affection and compassion and truth, those are great virtues. Tolerance is okay. It's really not up there on the list of virtues in my book. Anyway, the hate crimes are really just a nod to get at people who will say anything against the gay community. So if there's something, some view you have or you want to share in school about homosexuality not being the best option, or, gosh, my life was better after I left homosexuality, I'm sorry, but in the future that'll be considered hate crimes.
Or they'll say it could lead to a hate crime.
It could lead to a hate crime.
Somebody may listen to you and be inspired to go kill somebody else.
It's very scary. It's very, very scary.
Yeah.
There's already plenty of political power to this group. But you know what? The weird thing is homosexuality has not even been defined. So in this law, there is no definition of on gender basis or sexuality. So any sexuality could be considered a hate crime. I mean, it really, if you say anything against man-boy sex in the future, and then the UN rights of the child are being brought up. So at some point, a child can sue a parent. Let's say that child is wanting to be, a pedophile is trying to establish a relationship. The parent's protecting them from that relationship. The child wants out to go pursue. Well, guess what? You're stuck. You're no longer the protector.
I can see it. I can see it 15, 20 years from now. They're going to say that if you object to pedophilia, you're a pedophilophobe. I mean,
that's very, very bad.
They're starting to use this. In fact, in 1995, the American Psychiatric Association declassified pedophilia as an emotional disorder. Another one of those little facts you never hear about in the media.
Right.
They still gave a lot of double talk. They said, well, it's wrong, but it's just not technically an emotional disorder, but it was enough for NAMBLA to grab the reins of it and make a big issue out of it.
Exactly. And have you seen the letter from the senator appealing to Christian congregations and every other congregation, people of faith, to stand against this law? Have you seen that yet?
I haven't seen that. I do know that there's been an attempt on the part of the people that want to pass this legislation to reassure Christians that it's not going to interfere with their freedom of speech. I don't buy that for a moment. But
there's a minor clause in there, but the attorneys that have inspected it have said this is really irrelevant and holds no water.
Well, look how many lawsuits have gone on because a church wouldn't marry a gay couple even without this legislation. So
right.
Obviously this legislation doesn't mean a whole lot to some ambulance chasing attorney.
Right. It says here, though, Senator DeMint wrote, many people of faith have given up their freedom of speech and the freedom to practice their religious principles in all areas of their lives. Please tell your congregation this legislation is not about hate. All violent crimes are hateful. It's about taking away your freedom to speak and preach biblical truth. It will take away your right to say that some things are wrong. That's scary.
It is scary, and what's scary is, what's your prediction? And with a majority of Democratic senators, do you think this thing's going to pass, or do you think there's enough blue dog Democrats in the middle that enough letter writing might make a difference to them?
My only hope is that we all reach out and we do contact particularly Democratic senators. And it's pretty much along party lines here. So if we don't contact our senators, and the senators across the country, actually, please reach out and just email them. Get on the website and contact your senator. Let them know that this is not good legislation. You are not for it, and it is not defined well, and it's not clear, and this is not good for our country.
Okay, we've got to go. Ann, we'll have you on again. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Bob.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.